everyone. So glad to be back and connect with you all once again. We have some amazing new episodes on the way for you guys to listen to, including this one. So thank you for tuning in to Less Panic, More Peace. Today, we have a very unique guest, and she is an associate professor of medicine at Stanford University who specializes in allergy and critical care medicine. We will speak about some hope of new advancements, misconceptions, how mental health plays a role in food allergies, advice and tips for kids and parents, interesting stories, and so much more. So without further ado, I'm excited to introduce you all to Dr. Sharon Chinthraja. How are you doing today?
Hi, Rhea. Thanks for having me on the show. I'm doing great and very excited to be here with you today.
Awesome. Well, can you tell the audience a little bit about who you are and what you do?
Sure. I am an allergist and a pulmonologist and critical care doc at Stanford. I direct our clinical research unit for the Sean Parker Center. And the really fun part of my job is doing clinical trials to treat people with food allergies and really try and understand what could be good, safe, and durable treatment options for people with food allergies.
That's awesome. Well, you do research as well, right?
Yes. So the clinical trials research is a big part of my job. I also see patients with allergies and asthma. And that spans from babies to adults.
Oh, that's great. So how long have you been in this field, in this industry?
For a very long time. So I've been seeing patients for a very long time. I've been at Stanford doing clinical and translational research in food allergy for the last 8 years.
Wow. So you must have gained a lot of knowledge and a lot of wisdom throughout your years of doing what you're doing. And it's actually truly inspirational because it's like food allergies. I feel like it's also, in a way, I call food allergies an invisible disease because it's like nobody knows you're going through it, but it's fatal, you know, in a way. So I think what you're doing is truly amazing. So I kind of want to dive right into it and really ask you one big question about what parents might actually ask when their child may be diagnosed with food allergies or they don't know if their child has food allergies. So one of the biggest challenges for parents, and you might have had this question asked to you before, but many parents ask, what is the one of the great ways to understand and discover if your child does have an allergy?
Sure. Yes. We food allergy, as you mentioned, I love your analogy that it is an invisible disease. It's also a family disease, a very social disease. And so parents have a lot of questions when their child is first diagnosed with a food allergy. And that diagnosis is made by really listening to kind of the history from the family of what kind of symptoms did that child or adult have after they ate a particular food, and trying to be really good detectives and kind of and understand what were all the ingredients in a particular dish that were eaten at that time, what was the timing of the reaction. Are we convinced that this is an allergic reaction versus something like food poisoning or an intolerance to a food? And based on that kind of history, then we can kind of dive deeper and do some testing to truly understand if that's a real food allergy, an IgE-mediated food allergy.
Awesome. So I know about kind of I've had food allergies myself. My siblings have food allergies. So it's been an insane journey, to say the least. But testing is a really, I like how you said, also like the family disease, not only like an invisible disease, but a family disease, because my parents have to suffer kind of when we're having an allergic reaction, and kind of take us to the allergist offices, test us, do that whole process, maybe do immunotherapy. So it's basically it takes a village. So I know that testing might be a very big thing in the food allergy community. So to people who don't understand or don't know, have any prior knowledge about what testing is, how is that done with children?
Yeah, that's a great question. And Rhea, you're probably an expert at this, given your personal history and your family history. But what we're trying to do is do targeted testing, right? So base it on the clinical history that, you know, somebody had an allergic reaction. And then, you know, if peanut was in the dish, for instance, that we... that the history is the most important piece, and the testing is confirmatory. And so it could be skin prick testing, where we take little pricks and it touches peanut protein, and then we prick the skin. And then mast cells, which are immune cells that live in your skin, can be activated by IgE antibodies that recognize proteins in the drop, the liquids that you're testing with the prick, and release allergic chemicals and histamine. And then you can get a little hive, essentially, if you have an allergic reaction. And that hive looks like a mosquito bite. So it raises, it's itchy, it's red. And based on the reaction to what you're testing, we also have a positive control and a negative control to make sure that it's a good test. Then we can determine, based on how large that is, whether or not you have a true food allergy to the food that you're testing there. Another way that you can test is through blood tests for IgE antibodies to the particular food that you're trying to investigate. So in that case, you could do a peanut IgE blood test, which happens in the lab.
So I went to New York City last week, or, you know, a few days ago, and my aunt had these patches all over her back, and I was like, oh, what is this? And apparently she's getting allergy tested, but it's like these patches that she has to have on her back, and then she kind of itches it and she knows that she has an allergic reaction to that part. So have you seen that type of testing? Is that normally done as well?
Yeah, that's a great question, Rhea. So that's called patch testing. And that's a different type of allergy test, testing for a different type of allergic immune response. In food allergy, we're really testing for IgE-mediated allergic reactions. And for those types of tests, it's this prick test on the skin, not the patch test. The patch, you have some chemicals, you put the patch on the back, you leave it there for 24 to 48 hours to see what the reaction is, because that's a different allergic immune cascade that's occurring and testing a different arm of the immune system. Whereas really with food allergy, we're really trying to understand IgE-mediated food allergies, because those are the ones that can be life-threatening and lead to anaphylaxis or a severe reaction.
Oh, okay. That's interesting. Yeah. Cause I don't think she doesn't have any food allergies, but she is testing for all these other environmental allergies, all these other different types of ones. So I want to dive a little bit into the mental health aspect of the food allergy community, because I think it's such an important topic to speak up about. I feel like it's not talked about enough, and I would love to know your opinion and perspective on mental health, especially in children, because, you know, especially during a global pandemic where teenagers are forced to be alone with their thoughts and see influencers and celebrities on social media 24/7, you know, sharing about what they eat in a day or just the highlights of their life. So it's especially hard for teenagers in a pandemic with food allergies. So throughout your work, I'm just really curious, throughout your work on a daily basis, do you see children suffering mentally due to their food allergies at all?
That is a great question, Rhea, and thank you so much for highlighting this. So food allergy is a lifelong problem. And because food is so much a function of our social interaction and cultural interactions, you know, it helps us to connect with people. you know, there can be a lot of anxiety about those particular situations, or thinking about how to describe that anxiety to a friend, or to a stranger, or to a family member who doesn't really understand or doesn't really know more about kind of the life-threatening aspects of food allergy. So yes, this is something that we are well aware of. There have been studies that showed that sometimes kids are bullied because of their food allergies, which is horrible. And so it's something that is really important to bring up in conversation as a food allergy family, and think about ways that the child or the adults can handle and react to that. And then also to think about as a physician, when I'm talking to food allergy patients, really trying to understand how the patient is dealing with the social function of their food allergy, what they feel are limitations, negative aspects, and positive aspects, and giving them good coping skills.
That's great. I like how you said how a family should also be part of this entire thing, and just, you know, with the mental health aspect, and actually check in how they're doing. I like how you check in on your patients and see not only physically, but like mentally how you're doing, because I think that's such an important aspect in when dealing with food allergies. So much so that I'm actually creating this. I actually created a study, or I'm actually in the works of creating a study of how food allergies affect mental health. And if so, what are some potential solutions, right? Like, if I have this data and I say, okay, yeah, it does affect mental health, so what? You know, I want to actually kind of elaborate more on that and say, okay, so maybe food manufacturers can make the bolding increase on their labels, or, you know, waiters can offer allergy-free menus, kind of to alleviate that stress, that anxiety. And I've interviewed like 20 teenagers this past couple of weeks, and they've been saying the same things. They're saying like, I've been bullied, I'm tired of having allergies, this is, I feel like a burden. All these different types of words and what they're saying is just heartbreaking to me. Like, I feel the same way when I'm out with my friends. I don't want to mention my food allergies. You know, I don't want to eat something else that other people aren't eating. And it's just a prevalent thing for many teenagers to go through. So it's really, really difficult, you know?
Yeah. And I'm so sorry to hear that, Rhea. And I, that you've been bullied or that you feel stressed about this. And it really breaks my heart when my patients talk about that. And I think that we just, you know, just as we approach everything in life with kindness and compassion for our fellow human being, it's so important to have good friends that know you and know, you know, the limitations about eating outside, and kind of having a good, strong network that's so supportive that I think can help with these social aspects of eating outside of the home, or even at a friend's house for the patient who has food allergy. So I love the idea that you're trying to study this more. We're always interested in studying the mental aspects of it. And particularly in the clinical trials that we do, we recognize that that is a really important piece in the journey for desensitization when people treat their food allergies with oral immunotherapy, and kind of the lifelong journey for a food allergy patient.
Yeah. So I'm actually just curious on like what your clinical trials are like. What does that entail? What does that consist of?
Yeah. Clinical trials are always trying to answer a specific question. So the way they are designed is really to try and understand a specific question that you're trying to investigate, whether it's about a clinical outcome or the biological outcome of something. That really is what the question is really drives how the trial is designed. The clinical trials that we do are looking at treatment options for patients with food allergies. And it's research. So it's trying to test if one treatment option is able to produce a particular clinical outcome. So for a lot of the food allergy clinical trials, what we're testing in the majority of these clinical trials is, does a treatment option change the threshold sensitivity for that food allergic patient to that particular food? So for instance, if we're looking at a oral immunotherapy clinical trial for peanut, we're looking to see, okay, how reactive is a person at the start of a study before they enter into the clinical trial? You know, at what small amount of peanut do they have an allergic reaction? And that's done in a hospital setting under medical supervision. And then we're testing a peanut oral immunotherapy regimen compared to placebo. So there's always a control group, right? Uh-huh. To make sure that you're trying to understand that we didn't change this person's threshold sensitivity just by chance. Because for some of the foods, as you know, people can naturally outgrow some particular foods, food allergies, depending on, you know, their age and what food it is. And then at the end of the treatment period, we try and do a food challenge to understand, okay, have we changed the amount of, for instance, peanut that this person can now tolerate? So somebody might have reacted to 1/10 of a peanut before they started a clinical trial, and then may tolerate 8 peanuts at the end of a clinical trial. And you kind of draw your line in the sand about what's the mark that you're going to say is a successful outcome. You design statistics to see if this is different than the control arm. And so it's nerve-wracking because we already talked about how patients with food allergies naturally have anxiety that's normal about their food allergies. And then here we are asking them to participate in a clinical trial where they're actually potentially eating the food that they've been allergic to and trying to change their immune system to now not react to that food in an allergic way. But it's also exciting because you're taking, you know, an active role in contributing to the research that's moving this field forward to try and think and test different treatment approaches so that we can get to a point in time where someday we can say, okay, you've been diagnosed with a food allergy, but we have 10 different options to treat this. You don't have to suffer with a food allergy and avoidance, you know, for the rest of your life if you don't want to, right? So that's our goal, is to have many different treatment options out there for the patient who has food allergies. And we've got a few that have come through. You know, Palforzia was approved to treat peanut allergies for kids, but we've got a long way to go. And so so that's what our center, the Sean and Parker Center, and other research centers across the country are really working hard on trying to achieve.
Yeah, you know, that's so fascinating to me, these clinical trials, because it's like you're making a difference in this food allergy community. And kind of going back to the core of this podcast, where it's less panic and more peace, you're offering so much hope for people with food allergies. And I think that's what we really need. You know, whether you have food allergies or not, hope is what you really need to get through, especially this pandemic. So that's what you're offering for kids who have that. And I'm actually just curious, like, how are the kids who are, you know, cured of food allergies, treated of food allergies. Like, do you have any stories of where they kind of went from a state of panic to more of a state of peace due to the clinical trials?
Wow, that's a great question, Rhea. Well, I hope that many families who've gone through clinical trials get to a state of peace. And I think that peace comes in different stages. We have a lot of families that we've studied for many years now, almost, I would say, probably even out to 10 years. Wow. So families who've gone through a clinical trial become desensitized to the foods that they were allergic to. And maintained those foods in their diet so that they can kind of maintain that decreased reaction or increased threshold to an allergic reaction. And we have some very heartwarming stories. And then we have some other families who've gone through clinical trials, stuck with it for a while, and then, you know, life happens and haven't been able to maintain taking the food and incorporating into their regular diet, and, you know, have come back to us to try and figure out what else to do. And so that's why I think, you know, this is going to keep me busy, keep us busy for a long time, because we need different treatment options and different treatment approaches, because each patient is different and has different struggles and, you know, different other allergic conditions that might affect their treatment pathway. So we've got a lot of things, a lot of excitement, a lot of things that we're studying in clinical trials. And so, you know, it does offer a lot of hope and promise to the future of what the treatment field will look like for food allergy patients.
That's awesome. So for the audience that's, you know, for the listeners who are tuning in right now, and they're kind of in that moment of like, oh, I don't know what to do with my food allergies. Like, I just want some hope. Would you mind sharing a story, a heartwarming story, from something that, you know, some child that you kind of treated or anything like that? Do you have any stories you can share?
Oh yeah. Many, many stories. So I can tell you some things, some of the patients who have been treated at our center with multiple food allergies, have gone through clinical trials for, getting desensitized to more than one food, at the same time and come out on the other side, incorporated food into their diet. And we get notes from them, you know, as they've left the center, just to kind of fill us in on some of the things that they've been able to do that they didn't think were possible, before going through a clinical trial. So some of those, notable, like quick notes or messages from, people who've come through our center are, you know, one kid was able to go on a camping trip. He had a peanut allergy. He was able to go on a camping trip, and in a very remote area, felt very comfortable doing so, took all of his reaction medications with him, was well prepared because he, you know, had been, in one of our clinical trials at our center, and had a lot of good information about, being prepared to treat allergic reactions, was willing to take that adventure in hand. Other families who've said that they were fearful of getting on a plane and taking family vacations, because they were worried about allergic reactions, and then were able to go see relatives in a different country, because, they had gone through a clinical trial and were successfully maintaining, those foods into their diet, and felt the freedom to travel. And there've been adults who've been the same, who've been successful as well, who have successfully been desensitized to their food allergens and, you know, have taken jobs, changed jobs, that required more travel where they were hesitant to do that before. So all different types of stories, which are so heartwarming and really, at the end of the day is what we love to hear about. And this is why we keep doing this. And then we've also heard stories from families who've been struggling, and we'd love to hear from them too, because it's what motivates us to look for the next better, treatment option that provides more safety, and more long lasting, immune changes, that, can be feasible, as a treatment option for food allergy families.
Wow. So those stories really make me smile, because I'm sure it also motivates you and excites you, because you've been doing all the work and helping these people. And, you know, we just always hear these tragic stories, these tragic allergy stories. So it's so nice to hear, you know, the hope and the peace part of that, kind of that light at the end of the tunnel in a way. I'm so happy for those people who actually got treated. So I actually want to take a little intermission. I do this segment. It's called Fast Five Questions. And it's basically, I'm going to ask you five questions and you can answer as fast as you can. And I do this with every single one of my guests, and I basically time them as well. And see who gets it faster. So, are you ready? I'm just gonna time you really quickly, and you're just gonna answer as fast as you can.
Okay.
All right. Are you ready?
Yes.
Okay. How do you come across clearly to a waiter or waitress? What are some tips for parents to do that?
Come across clearly about food allergies?
Yes.
Tell them I have a food allergy. I really cannot eat any foods with, or any dishes with this ingredient. And if we're talking about milk, that includes cheese, butter, and go through the whole list. And then say, can I please speak to the chef or the person who's preparing my food? Just to make sure that, this will be a safe option for me to eat tonight.
Okay, awesome. And what is one tip from you when you travel with food allergies? What is one tip you can give people?
Keep your reaction medication in your on your person. And if you need a doctor's note for EpiPens or epinephrine auto-injectors, please reach out to your doctor for that. Make sure you always have them in a twin pack, and then more in your luggage if you need it, depending on where you're going and how long you're staying.
Awesome.
And then your own snacks, so you know that there's something that you trust that you can eat.
Yes, definitely. What's your step-by-step procedure during allergic reaction?
One is make sure you're not alone, so call for help. Two is hopefully you're carrying your handy dandy emergency pack. Don't be afraid to use epinephrine, and then seek greater medical care at an emergency room or an urgent care if you're unsure about, you know, whether or not you've treated adequately.
Awesome. Do you think that parents should stop eating the allergen at the home for their children, or what's your perspective on that?
I think that that will not be a quick answer. I think that's a complicated question, and those are definitely conversations I have with families to understand what the nuances are.
Okay, awesome. And then allergy-free snacks, brands, or apps that you may recommend?
Yeah, there's lots of great apps to try and find good dining, like the Spoken app, which will find allergy-friendly restaurants in your area based on your zip code. And then the FAIR network has wonderful resources, and there's great allergy blogs out there as well. So there's a lot of resources online. And some of those, I would say, if they seem questionable or you've never heard of that, I would always bring that back to your allergy doc. So trust your instincts, because there's a lot of information that's put out there on the internet. And if something seems too good to be true, then it may be. So try, you know, seek wisdom everywhere, but verify that it's accurate.
You survived. You have 3 minutes and 28 seconds. No, you did amazing.
Oh, thank you, Rhea.
I kind of want to go back to the core of the podcast about, you know, less panic, more peace. we have already discussed so many, you know, great things about parents and tips and all that stuff. So now I kind of want to go on to that more, kind of dive deep into that immunology and that, you know, peaceful side of everything really quickly. So I want to ask you a question that I'm actually very fascinated and curious about. I've heard this idea on a podcast I was listening to recently in the car, and they were basically saying that the more amounts of medicines you take, the easier it will be to become like resistant to that medicine. And I have very severe environmental allergies as well. And so if I take Zyrtec, for example, for a long period of time, it will slowly become non-effective. That's what I've heard. So is this true? And if so, does immunotherapy work that way? You know, that specific resistance, does the COVID vaccine work that way? Maybe like giving that little protein of the virus in order for you to become resistant from it. What's your thoughts on that?
Oh, these are great questions. So what you're talking about is tolerance. And it's actually great immunology because it's a balance of, you know, receptors recognizing specific targets. And if you take some medications, can you downregulate those receptors or upregulate other receptors? And so there's not a specific answer for the whole category that you asked. I think each of those circumstances are unique. But it comes down to immunology and the balance of allergy and tolerance. For your specific question about Zyrtec, you know, there are some patients who feel like Zyrtec or cetirizine was very effective, and then maybe the next year less effective. And it could be due to a number of factors. It could be due to the amount of exposure that they're having. Maybe it's just not enough to, you know, maybe there's a, you know, our pollen seasons are actually becoming longer because of climate change. And so maybe there's just more chronic exposure to the allergens, or that your allergies are becoming more severe and, first line medications like antihistamines are no longer effective. But when you're talking about desensitization, you are slowly giving increasing amounts of that allergen to desensitize your body to skew away from allergy and more towards tolerance. And that's because you're promoting more regulatory immune cells to balance out that scale, if that makes sense. And so that's an active process of changing your biology within. It's like flexing your immune muscle.
So cool. I actually was just reading this article about how sea otters have this sort of, you know, they're leaky mitochondria. They leak their energy in order to heat themselves from their mitochondria. So I don't know, there's just like so many different specific scientific evidence about just your bodily functions and, you know, how they work to solve a specific problem, which is so interesting.
I think everything that you're saying, Rhea, is that, you know, is wonderful that you're so curious and inquisitive and trying to hunt down facts and understand the science behind, you know, these questions is really phenomenal. You know, curiosity is something that you can't, you know, curiosity and passion are always just so exciting to see in young individuals. And it's people like you who have curiosity and passion who will change the world.
Oh my gosh, thank you so much. I really appreciate your words. So thank you so much for being on this podcast.
Thank you, Rhea, for having me. Good luck.
Thank you. Thank you all for listening to Less Panic, More Peace. I hope this is super, super beneficial for you. She shared so much wisdom. So new episodes out every other Saturday. Peace out.